Fine, shall we repeat the argument of yesterday, just to refresh our mind? This question is of the relationship between the universal and the particular. And the first argument against Plato's theory is based upon the question whether the particular partakes of the whole idea or only a part. And then, if you say whole, there is a difficulty. If you say only a part, there is a difficulty. And therefore, the question remains unanswered by Plato in that sense. If it partakes of the whole, then the same thing will be at many places. If it partakes of the part only, then there is the absurdity that a small thing will be smaller than the small. So, in either way, the problem remains unresolved. The second argument is the argument of the third man. The argument of the third man is a very important argument, because you find this argument coming throughout the history of philosophy in the West. So I'll repeat this argument again in detail so that it is fixed in the mind quite well. The argument begins with the question of similarity. If two particulars are similar to each other, then you need to explain the similarity. Why two things are similar to each other? The answer of Plato is that they are similar to each other because both of them partake of the same universal idea. Therefore they are similar. Now the argument says that if so, then there is a similarity between the particular and the universal. Now how will you explain this similarity? So you have to posit another universal which is partaken of by both the universal and the particular. Having done so, there will be a further question as to the similarity between this new universal and the previous universal. And how do you explain the similarity between the two? So you posit as further universal. And this can go on. And if the chain comes to an end, the argument is not finalized. Therefore, this is the argument of infinite regress. Let us repeat it. A cat and another cat are similar to each other. The question is, how will you explain the similarity? The answer is that there is a universal cativeness. And both of them partake of this, therefore they are similar to each other. Now the question is that there is a similarity between this cat and this one. So you will be required to ask and answer, what is it that explains the similarity between this and this? The only answer that could be given according to this argument is that there is another universal. Because of this universal, the similarities and this can be explained. So if this universal cativeness is A, then this universal is B, another universal. And then you ask the question, what this universal is similar to this universal. A and B are similar to each other. And how do you explain that similarity? So you posit a further universal. Let us say C. And this chain can go on and on and on and on. It never finishes. And therefore, the argument is never complete. If the argument is never complete, the argument doesn't hold good. Any argument to hold good must end. It must at the final point, final terminus. Therefore, this whole idea of universal ideas of Plato suffers from the difficulty of infinite regress and therefore invalid. This is the second argument, the argument of the third man. The third argument is that if everything in the world has something corresponding in the realm of ideas, then there must be also a universal idea of dirt, of mud, of hair. And this seems to be absurd. A universal dirt, what does it mean? So this is the third argument. The fourth argument is that ideas are thoughts, and thoughts always refer to something beyond themselves. Therefore, ideas can never be ultimate. And according to Plato's theory, ideas are ultimate. Therefore, Plato's theory is unacceptable. This is the fourth argument. In future, you will come across the similar arguments in philosophy. In philosophy, there are not many arguments, in fact. If you master these four arguments, in future also you'll be helped to understand other arguments. That is why I took so much time only on these four arguments. Now we come to a further elaboration of Plato. All these arguments point to the difficulty of reconciling the universal and the particular. And in Parmenides itself, Plato seems to be struggling to arrive at some solution. We must remember that these four arguments are not actually ultimately unanswerable arguments. At present, I have presented them in such a way as if they are unanswerable, but it is not true. These arguments have defects in themselves, and one day we shall be able to find out the defects. It's an exercise which you have to do one day, when we shall be able to reject all these arguments, in fact, and we shall be able to restate Plato in a more glorified form, saying that Plato was right and his arguments were wrong. And we shall try to do that, because there is something so precious in Plato. You know, Sri Aurobindo has said that Plato was in touch with the supermind. So we have to remember this fact, that Plato was in touch with the supermind, and his theory of ideas is extremely important. And there's a great truth in this theory. And therefore, if it is simply rejected in this fashion, it is simply a first view, the first way view or in which we happen to reject his argument, Plato's theory. But when we examine in more detail, we shall find that these arguments will not be sustained. And we shall do this exercise also. And that is a greater exercise. These arguments which seem to be so solid. Now, Plato himself, in this dialogue called Parmenides, he is struggling to solve this problem, answer these four arguments. But this dialogue is inconclusive. Although this dialogue is inconclusive, he at least shows the impossibility of assuming the one only or the many only as the ultimate reality. Now here, in Parmenides, Plato raises another question of one and many. It is similar to the question of universal and the particular. Now this question, let us try to understand, because in philosophy, the question of universal and particular is an important problem. Then there is another problem of one and many. It is similar to the first problem, but there is still a difference. So let me write down on the board so that these two problems are fixed in the mind. Universal and particulars have a relationship of one and many. One catiness and many cats. One ideal chair and many chairs. So you can say that with regard to every universal, there is a problem of one and many. But this is only one illustration of the problem of one and many. universal and particular. But there is another line of thinking in which we meet the problem of one and many, and that has a different context. You remember I spoke last time of Plato's theory of the good and the theory of God. I spoke to you of the theory of the soul and its immortality. And then there is a question as to what is ultimate. Is soul ultimate? Is God ultimate? Is good ultimate? And I explained to you the question of ultimate. What is ultimate and what is penultimate? Penultimate is 1 degree below ultimate. If there are degrees, like hot, hotter, hottest, then hot is the starting point, hotter is penultimate, and hottest is the ultimate. So penultimate is 1 degree remote from the ultimate, is penultimate. So now the question is that apart from universal and particular and the relationship between the two, there are further problems of relationship. And we have 3 terms, the soul, the good, and God. And what is the relationship of these 3? One of the most important problems of philosophy is to relate. Philosophy is even defined as an exercise of establishing ultimate relationships, not only penultimate relationships but ultimate relationships. Science also relates. Science, when you study science, you say there is a relationship between oxygen and hydrogen and water. It's a relationship that if you combine together, then it becomes a cause and water becomes an effect. So there is a relationship of cause and effect between oxygen and hydrogen on one part and water on the other. It's a relationship. But there are many kinds of relationships. This is a causal relationship. Then there is a reciprocal relationship. Not causal, but reciprocal. Uncle and nephew is not a causal relationship, it's a reciprocal relationship. Uncle cannot exist without the nephew, and nephew cannot exist without the uncle. The relationship called nephew cannot exist without the relationship of an uncle. And the relationship of uncle cannot exist without the relationship of a nephew. The 2 relationships are reciprocal. Even if you say that one causes the other, you have to say that the 2 cause each other. Not that one causes the other, but 2 cause each other simultaneously. So it's another kind of relationship. In mathematics, you have also sequential relationship. 2 comes after 1. It's a sequence. 3 comes after 2. 4 comes after 3. 5 comes after 4. It's a sequential, it's not a cause. 1 is not the cause of 2. 2 is not the cause of 3. 3 is not the cause of 4. It is simply a question of sequential relationship. You arrange things in a sequential manner, and therefore relationship is sequential. Aaron is not the cause of Devi, but Aaron has a relationship with Devi in this particular formation, in which Aaron precedes Devi, if I look it from the left hand side, but if I look it from this side, Devi precedes Aaron. It's a sequential relationship. It's not a causal relationship. It's not a reciprocal relationship either. It is only sequential relationship.